Hi, I'm Ian Schlachten. This is the Ian Schlachten Show. For those of you just joining us, I'm a revolutionary socialist, and this show is basically about capitalism versus socialism. So I hope you like that topic, because that's what we're going to talk about. Also, in this time of pandemic, I really think it's important to talk a little bit about the idea of did capitalism prepare us for this? Would there be a better system in place that could have prepared us for the pandemic? Were there other systems or experts in other fields that were telling us to heed the warnings of the idea of a global pandemic? And did we listen, or did we think that the marketplace will just take care of it? I think that's sort of the main topic of today's show that I'm going to touch on. We were supposed to have a guest. The guest was going to be Reverend Annie Chambers, but unfortunately, she received some pretty bad news last night about one of her grandsons in the prison system. And I will be touching on that a little bit later as well. You know, but earlier this week, I just want to give a shout out to Reverend Annie Chambers, because she organized 3 days in a row food pickups from and deliveries into Douglas Homes, the public housing project that she represents in Baltimore City. She did 3 or 4 food drop-offs during the day from Wednesday to Friday. Hundreds of people were able to get groceries because of her. It was an enormous effort. I went down there, gave some support where I could. Some other folks, some comrades of mine here from here in Baltimore with the People's Power Assembly joined in. We handed out flyers telling people where they could get food. We went door to door showing folks exactly where the food is located, or actually dropping food off to the elderly, to those newborn mothers, to those that are too sick. We were able to drop off tons of food. And one of the reasons we had to do this and not the government, and by government, I mean Baltimore City, Baltimore City Public Housing, or even the National Guard that's now been deployed to Baltimore, is because there is a rule about public housing not being able to receive food deliveries from food pantries, which is completely insane. But I think for those of us that have been doing work in the public housing projects to the homeless and the poor for quite some time, we all know that the government makes all kinds of terrible, terrible, terrible decisions about how to treat the poor and the homeless. And if you look from Florida all the way to California, there's rules about not feeding the homeless. Literally, people have gotten arrested for feeding the homeless. There's just this notion out there that homeless could house themselves anytime they want to, and they simply choose not to, which is, of course, disgusting and obviously incorrect. Nobody is intentionally making themselves homeless to get some sort of free food. That's completely ridiculous, but that is how the government tends to treat these things, you know. And it's not just conservative governments. I think we often tend to think that, oh, it's conservatives that do this kind of BS. You know, my local Democratic Party would never do this kind of stuff. Well, it's happening right here in Baltimore City, and it's completely shameful. So I think that we have to kind of recognize that. So, you know, but one of the real topics I wanted to get to on this show, and we're going to make this a bit of a short show because we don't have the guest, unfortunately, but anyone could still call it if they like, who's listening, feel free. But one of the things I really wanted to get to, particularly on this show, is this. Before the pandemic started, there was a lot of talk about the idea of, do we need Medicare for all? Do we need a universal healthcare system in this country? And I think a lot of folks would obviously say, yes, I count myself in that yes camp. But a lot of folks say, well, you know, that's socialism. You can't have the government getting involved and redistributing healthcare, and then, you know, the government's paying doctors or paying nurses and getting involved in every step of the bureaucracy. You know, we want the private market to still have a role. So this is a fantastic debate, but a lot of folks are just focusing on the idea of a base of universal healthcare versus corporate profit, private health insurance healthcare. And, you know, that sort of misses the mark. The mark sort of is more along the lines of, do we need the free market? Do we need capitalism? Do we need private companies involved in a healthcare delivery at all? Does that really help make our healthcare more efficient? Or does it just get in the way? And Is the idea of charging people for every little healthcare cost, whether they're paying premiums for their health insurance, or whether they're paying cash at the doctor for every little service, does that make us all healthier? Does that make people healthier? Is that a smarter system than having the government be involved with healthcare? And I think that, the idea that the government is involved in healthcare versus the notion that people and individuals should be making the decisions is something that kind of gets lost. Let me explain what I mean. So, right now we have a system where if you are seen by a doctor and they recommend a type of treatment, you have to go then seek approval from your healthcare provider. So from your insurance company, rather. So that's one way to do it. I think that if we look at how ridiculous that is, though, because what does the health insurance provider really know about what you need or what you don't need? What we're talking about is a system where individuals who are, healthcare professionals like doctors and nurses can actually just go ahead and have the authority to make that decision on for you or with you. If you need a certain type of treatment and the doctor agrees and the doctor says this is what you need to live, this is what you need to not die, to not have a disease, then, why do we have insurance companies that are kind of getting in the way of that? And what Medicare for All, a lot of folks talk about universal health care. I'm going to use that term instead because it follows a little bit better here. What we're talking about with universal health care is the idea that we're not talking about substituting a government bureaucrat, someone sitting in D.C. who gets paid by the government, substituting them for the health insurance bureaucrat, the person that works for a private company who can deny your claim. What we're talking about is the doctor or the nurse actually saying, we're going to make that decision for you. We're going to make the decision with you. We're going to tell you what you need from a treatment standpoint. And as long as you and your doctor agree to it, you get the treatment. It's that simple. It's sort of like flying a plane. The pilot doesn't call down to Southwest or JetBlue every 5 minutes and ask them, should I make a left turn? Should I make a right turn? Should I land now? That's not really what they're doing. What they're doing is they're making those decisions minute by minute in the sky, based on what they see to get the plane landing safely. So, just those two examples right there, we can kind of extrapolate a little bit further and say, are there other areas of our economy that maybe we should be taking the idea of a for-profit system out of the picture? One that comes to my mind all the time, because we were in a crisis around this before the pandemic, before coronavirus, is housing. Do we have the best system of housing where anyone can become a landlord? The landlords can basically charge whatever they want, almost with impunity. One day you could be sitting in a fine, modest apartment. The next day the landlord could come in and renovate it to make it a luxury apartment, and you owe an extra $1,000 on your rent. Now, there are certain laws that we definitely have on the books that say landlords can only raise the rent X amount of dollars. We even used to have universal rent control in certain cities, in certain counties throughout the country. But recently, those rules have kind of gone away. And, the rental market is just kind of a crapshoot now, to be frank with you. Every year, rents get more and more and more expensive, and wages are sort of stagnant. So, we were very much in a housing crisis before the pandemic. And now that you see with the pandemic, now you kind of see the fact that so many people are making that decision at the end of the month. Do I pay my landlord the rent, or am I screwed? And I either don't pay them and I won't be evicted, because there's pretty much a moratorium on evictions at this point for most people in most of the country. But if I don't pay my rent this month and the next month and the next month, will I just be evicted because I didn't pay for 3 months when the pandemic is over? You know, it's something very, very important that we start to think about now. And when you get that check that Congress just authorized of $1,200 plus, well, is that gonna go towards your rent? Because I know many people that $1,200 check would be their entire rent check made out to their landlord. So maybe we need to look at the idea that housing in the marketplace, in the space of capitalism, doesn't really make any sense. People need houses to live. If you are worried about eviction all the time, you're not living your healthiest life. If your only motivation as a landlord is to make as much profit as possible, then that's not really you treating something as an essential service. You're treating it as something that you could just make a ton of money on. And so maybe it's time that we say, as a country, the idea of capitalism for not just healthcare, but also for things like housing doesn't make any sense. Maybe we don't need capitalism involved in the internet. You know, maybe the notion of making sure every single person in the country has good, reliable internet, especially in times of crisis like the coronavirus crisis, is more important than actually Comcast or Spectrum or Charter or whoever you use making a profit. Maybe it's time that we recognize that this is an essential service that we need to live, and if people don't have it, they'll die. I mean, with the internet, I'm sure I'm going to get some folks that are going to disagree with me on that, but let's really look at it. If you don't have the internet and information about how to clean yourself, how to, you know, make sure you're not getting the virus, you know, symptoms to look for if you feel sick, what to do if you get sick, where to go, you know, who's doing testing, who's not. You know, if you don't have that information, you will die. I mean, there's no really way around it. I mean, sure, you could risk it and stay home and try to luck it out. But we're already seeing reports of people that are just staying home who are very, very sick, who are choosing not to go to a hospital or a doctor because they don't really know and they're scared, or they just get sick too quickly and no one checked in on them. So the idea of cutting off the internet to people who don't have enough money kind of seems like a bad idea in the middle of the pandemic. And I'm going to say something that makes, you know, that really I don't think should be controversial at this point, is that maybe it was a bad idea before the pandemic. Maybe if more people had more information on a day-to-day, for everyday essential information that they need to live, let's go back and talk about, you know, a favorite conservative talking point. Well, the flu killed people. You know, I mean, if people knew where to get the flu vaccine every year, you know, what it was going to do symptom-wise if they get it, what it would prevent, you know, so they can make that informed decision for themselves whether or not they wanted to get it or, you know, let someone else get it. If people had the access to information like that, I think that, obviously the world would be a much better and safer place. I don't think you could really deny the fact that if you don't have a smartphone these days that you're walking around with, you won't know about certain things that are happening. You won't have access to information that everyone else has. I mean, who hasn't gotten an Amber Alert or a Silver Alert about people that are abducted or missing? Who hasn't gotten information about earthquake warning or hurricane warning or tornado warning? These are things that you desperately need to make sure that you are getting out of the way of danger, let alone being able to talk to your friends and family and loved ones throughout the country, throughout the world even. So I think it's time that we reassess a lot of these things that we just let sit there in the capitalist marketplace, such as the internet, such as housing, such as healthcare. I would also go as far as to say transportation is another really important one as well. Why don't we have the right to visit people? I mean, especially in this time of the coronavirus, if you have an elderly loved one, you're probably freaking out. A lot of us do. I certainly do. I try to check in on them as often as possible. But let's be honest with you, if I got a call that an elderly loved one, maybe a couple cities away, needed some help, and I didn't have a car, how would I get there? You know, how would I tend to them? What would I do? just the fundamental notion that everything we do has to have a cost to it, has to be pay to play, is a misnomer. It's part of an economy that I feel personally is designed to fail people. When you tell people that you have to have enough money to get the basics, food, internet, heat, electricity, shelter, when you tell them they have to have enough money, a lot of people are going to inevitably be unable to pay one thing or another that they need to live. It's simple. It's that simple. No one should be homeless. No one should be going hungry. No one should have to worry about their electricity or their heat being shut off. But that's the reality of the world that we live in right now. And I think that as we're seeing with the pandemic, you know, a lot of these notions are falling apart because they're kind of people are realizing that, well, we don't have to shut people's water off where they can't pay because they need water and it'll make things worse. They don't have to shut electricity off when they can't pay because they need electricity and it'll make things worse for everybody. The idea that not everyone has access to testing is going to make it a lot worse for everyone, because when you have people walking around performing essential services, keeping your lights on, keeping your water flowing, people that you'll meet if you have to go to the hospital, people that are doing security or even police, and they're all going to get sick because they don't have regular access to the doctor. I mean, this is something that we really need to think about way, way, way beyond the pandemic. The notion that we don't live in a safe economy. I know that sounds a little weird, but just hear me out. The economy, the idea that you have to, the capitalist economy that we run, the idea that you have to pay for literally everything is a big part of this problem. Because it doesn't just make sure that if you sign up for it, you get it. It actually says that you have to pay and keep paying and keep paying and keep paying. And if you ever stop paying, you ever lose your job and can't afford it anymore, you get those essential services cut off. And, you know, that makes all of us less safe. You know, if my neighbor doesn't have access to electricity, or my elder mother doesn't have access to heat, or, you know, my sister who has a newborn child doesn't have access to food, it doesn't make me safer. This isn't an economy where, you know, some of us win because we have a lot of money and some of us lose because we don't. It's an economy where people die if they don't have enough money, and then everyone is made less safe because of this stupid system that we live in. And that's really the way we have to start thinking about it. Everything that people need to be essential, really, we need to start thinking about removing it from the monetary system entirely, making sure that it's just free, making sure that you just get it. Obviously, for some services, this is going to be easy. Medicare for all is a very easy answer. I think there are other good transitional demands which are easy as well, such as like a basic income guarantee, which we could use to then answer harder questions. Because if we gave everyone $1,200 a month going forward, at least we know some people could afford their rent. Not everybody, but some people could afford their rent. Some people could afford their groceries. But then we have to continue the struggle to say, let's remove other things from the capitalist economy and put them into a different system. And I'm talking about things like food. And I'm talking about things like healthcare. I'm talking about things like shelter, like places to live. I'm talking about things like electricity and heat. We can't just keep charging and charging and charging people and then be surprised when they can't afford it because they're experienced a layoff or the economy went south or the field that they live in isn't, or the field that they work in isn't doing well at that point in time. We have to guarantee these things as rights for people to live. And, you know, I like to tell people that I talk to all the time that I was just on a show the other day where literally, you know, people are making a lot of comparisons to China because in China, in Wuhan, you know, when you got sick, the government would come in and literally volunteer would come out to your house every day and make sure you have food, medicine, that you're doing okay, that you don't need anything else. And they would be covered in protective garb, and there wouldn't be any risk of them getting sick. And there wouldn't be any risk of you infecting other people because you don't have to run out sick to the supermarket or to the pharmacy. Someone came and took care of you. That is a much better system for a pandemic than what we're seeing in the US. And I suspect that a lot of the problems that we see in the US stem from the fact that we don't have a system like that. I think that's going to be obvious to people really soon. Well, the fact that we're making elderly folks go out and get groceries is a terrible, terrible, terrible move. And there's a lot of patchwork out there. There's a lot of people doing a lot of good, doing grocery deliveries and stuff like that. But for the most part, people are saying, just go home and use an app to get Instacart delivered to you, to get Uber Eats delivered to you. Okay, well, I don't know about you all, but my grandmother certainly doesn't know how to use Uber Eats or Instacart. All right. And second of all, those that cost money. So even if you have someone that could walk you through it over the phone to use it, you still have to pay quite a lot for Uber Eats or for Instacart or other places like that. That's even before they waived all the fees. So these aren't cheap. People just can't afford everything like this. And that's what's going to lead to a lot of deaths. But just taking a step back for a minute, I think what we're really talking about here is the notion that when a crisis hits, it sort of makes us see how the marketplace capitalist, like pay-to-play economy, doesn't really work. It puts into our minds the idea that, like, let's get money into people's hands. But it also shows us like a universal basic income. But even though they didn't even do that, Congress recently passed a means test, which means that if you make too much money last year, you'll be denied money this year. Which I've had people ask me all the time, how does that make any sense? Because what if I made $100,000 last year and then this year I made nothing because I've been unemployed? Well, it doesn't make any sense. So, screw off is, I think, the answer that the government is kind of giving you right now. And just for those that are uninitiated, when I say the government, I'm talking about folks that are currently elected. And yes, you have people that are in Congress that are socialists, like Bernie Sanders or AOC or Ilhan Omar. But 90% of the people in Congress, dare I say 95% of the people in Congress, do not identify as socialist. They are very much capitalist. They believe in the free market. Every single thing could be in the free market potentially, and just let's give discounts or government programs for those people that are too poor to afford the rest. That is not what we're talking about. That's not socialism. That is reform capitalism. It's the idea that, oh, capitalism generally works. We're just gonna tinker around the edges and make some programs that can help some poor people because there aren't that many poor people. Well, that's a bunch of bullshit. I don't know how else to say it. It's just a bunch of bullshit. That notion is nonsense. You absolutely need a system that systematically says everything has to be at the base economic floor. And what I mean by that is, if I have nothing, if I lost it all, if I was in an industry like construction, and the construction industry in my area just goes south and nobody needs new homes, that I need a way to make sure that my family still has enough to live and to eat and to get medicine and to do all of the things they need to live. You can't just say, okay, well, these things are only available to those that can pay for them. That economic system simply doesn't make sense. And it will cause people to die. It will cause people to not be able to afford the stuff that they need to live. It's really important that we understand that fundamentally. So the economic system that I'm calling for is some have called revolutionary socialism. I call it that. Others have called it stuff that you'd see like post-scarcity stuff. Models are like the Venus Project or the Zeitgeist Movement's RBE, a resource-based economy. But really, it's just an economy that kind of says that everything that we need to live has to be redistributed through a system that is not capitalism. Okay. So a lot of folks, when they hear that term, they kind of think immediately that the government is going to take over that role. But that's actually not what the point of these conversations are about. The point of these conversations are not to say that the government has to take over the role of handing out essential services. The point of these conversations is to say that these essential services should be free and that there should be institutions that value them that are different than the institutions that put values on things right now. So I'll give you a great example. So when the economy started to go south, immediately you see the Fed and the Treasury kind of working hand in hand to print as much money as possible to make sure that the banks and Wall Street have enough to stay afloat. There was even a New York Times article recently that reflected this. You know, Fed say the printing press is on and to the max, I think was something along the lines of the article. And they're basically just printing money and handing it out to the banks and Wall Street nonstop. On an unlimited basis, there are people that are counting it, but the message is that it will be delivered in an unlimited amount to make sure the economy, quote unquote, doesn't collapse. Now, you know, I don't really have a lot to say about that, other than the fact that it kind of goes to show you that our system, our economic system, literally says that the U.S. and other central banks have the ability to print money to keep things afloat. Okay, so if we could keep the banks afloat, if we could keep Wall Street afloat and not just on a constant nosedive course, why can't we do that with things that we actually need? Why can't we keep small farms afloat? Why can't we keep farmers markets afloat? Why can't we keep people doing utility or co-op housing afloat, or electric production afloat, or other things that we need to live? Why can't we do clothing giveaways afloat? You know, why are we able to fund Wall Street, or we're able to fund the banks infinitely, practically, or we're able to continuously have Congress agree to pay for wars, or to hand out massive amounts of cash to the military industry, but we don't really seem to be able to get consensus over those things that people need. Should be funded by the government. Now, I want to be really clear about this too. What I'm actually saying is that if I walk into a bank and told the bank I'm going to be able to make a lot of money selling this new kind of computer, you know, I'm going to make a ton of money and then you'll get your return on your investment. Like, okay, that's fine. You know, the local bank will make a decision based on whether or not they think your business plan is solid. What I'm actually calling for is the idea that we should have little mini local, let's call them Federal Reserves, that should actually be able to help our local institutions that we need to live, such as like a local farm or a local farmer's market, or a local apartment complex. Why not actually turn things on their head and say, well, we don't really need the banks or Wall Street. They don't really do much of anything, to be frank with you. Why don't we actually take things out of capitalism and put them into the non-capitalist market? Why don't we actually make a non-capitalist market? Why don't we actually make things free? So just like kind of we're saying for universal health care, why not let your doctors make the best decision for your health with you in the lead, of course? Why don't we do the same thing for food? Why don't we do the same thing for electricity? Why don't we do the same thing for housing? And each and every one of these industries are unique. I'm not saying that it would be an easy transition, but what I am saying is that unless we start to guarantee the right to housing, unless we start to guarantee the right to food, unless we start to guarantee the right to electricity and heat and shelter and the internet, we're going to continue to face crisis after crisis after crisis after crisis. We're not going to be able to handle the world as it is. You know, the climate crisis, you know, based on what we're seeing from the pandemic, looks like it could be easily solved by just slowing down the economy, by canceling airfare, by, you know, by making informed decisions about whether or not to take a flight or take a train, or to use remote tools to do that next conference instead of going in person. These things are definitely possible. The problem is that we don't really value the idea of efficiency. And I know everyone's told, you know, from birth basically, to believe that capitalism is the most efficient system. It's not. It's a complete fiction. Capitalism is the cheapest system. It's the cheapest system. Capitalists who run capitalism, whether that's a CEO or CFO or, you know, someone running a hedge fund or someone, you know, some big money market investor, you know, they will find the cheapest solution to a problem. They will send factories over to China where, people don't have the same level of work standards as they do here in the legal markets in the U.S. They'll send it to unscrupulous sweatshops here in the U.S. They'll send their, rather than, make tanned goods here in the U.S., they'll send that to India where there's a terrible unregulated market of tanned goods. That pollute the streets. I mean, they'll always do the cheapest option every single time. But that doesn't mean it's the most efficient, because polluting India or, exploiting slave labor in Asia or slave labor here in North America isn't really efficient. It's cruel. It's unnecessary. It's sadistic. But it's cheap. But it's cheap. An efficient system would be automating tractors to the point where, through GPS, they can automatically turn and, run 24/7, on electricity instead of on gas. That's efficient. But does every single small farmer have the ability to bring one of those tractors in? No, only the largest farms have the ability to bring those in, not small farms. Efficiency does not equate cheapness. And I think we're just so brainwashed into thinking that that's the case in our system. You know, when you look at the cost of a plane ticket, do you also see the economic, the environmental cost, rather, of how much carbon you'll be producing when you get that plane ticket? No, you don't see that at all. That's never in the equation. It's just about what the price is versus the price of a train ticket versus the price of a bus ticket. So capitalism is wildly inefficient. Wildly inefficient. Even in my job, I do IT for a living. And there's customers that I see that are all over the state of Maryland. And, you know, in a more efficient system, I wouldn't have to compete with other IT competitors all over the state to just become the cheapest price. I could actually call folks that are in other communities and say, hey, someone in your community needs tech support, why don't you go out there and handle this one, because I'm, an hour away and it would cost me such and such in gasoline, or such and such in wear and tear on my car, even if it's electric. We just don't think about those efficiencies. Our world isn't built like that. Our world is built to be dog-eat-dog, pay-to-play, and if you don't have the money to pay your rent, then you're homeless. It's kind of like that simple of an equation. And, you know, not only does it cause enormous mental stress for those that, you know, are constantly thinking about, can I pay my mortgage? Can I pay my bills? Can I pay my rent? But it's just an inefficient system. It's just an entirely inefficient system. In Baltimore City, we have, where I live, we have an incredible amount of empty houses, you know, vacants, as we call them. And, you know, rather than build, rehab the vacants and let people live in them, basically the system that is in play in Baltimore City's housing market is we encourage vacants for entire blocks, for entire square city blocks, for entire neighborhoods. And then we beg billionaires like Amazon or Walmart to come in and bulldoze entire neighborhoods and put in a warehouse or put in a new big box store. That's the efficiency of capitalism at play in my own neighborhood, in my own neighborhoods in Baltimore. It doesn't make any sense. We have people that are literally sleeping on the streets homeless. You have vacants that are just boarded up. The idea that you could get a construction crew in there, and you have more than enough people that are unemployed in Baltimore that would love a job, a regular steady job, rehabbing vacants, you know, and then put people in the vacants to live rather than just have these people be homeless, is just not really done in my city. And I can almost guarantee you it's not done in your city either. What is done is someone will sit on that house, sit on that piece of land, and they'll just sit and sit and sit and sit and sit. And I mean, an investor who will have bought it for pennies on the dollar. You have crumbling infrastructure in our city in Baltimore. Literally, you have wooden aqueducts running underneath the city, wooden pipes, and there's no money to replace them. There's no profit in replacing infrastructure, so it just doesn't get done. There's profit in turning our formerly regulated utility into a private company that's unregulated, and so that gets done. But nobody still fixes up any of the pipes or any of the electrical cables that are our main infrastructure for the city, because it's too expensive and why would you bother? I mean, Verizon literally told Baltimore it was not going to be investing in fiber in our city. So our city has virtually no fiber infrastructure except for some loose government-owned stuff. So, I mean, that's the sort of efficiency of capitalism right there. And I think that it's time that we completely rethink this. So if you liked what you heard today, if you want to hear more from on-the-ground organizers, not just in Baltimore, but throughout the country, people that are socialist and anarchist and socialist revolutionaries and people that are actually living in poverty, and organizing folks, people from doing organizing in prisons and how they're dealing with the coronavirus pandemic, people that are organizing longshoremen or workers in supermarkets at Walmart. This is the show for you. And also the idea that we are going to be talking a lot about the idea of getting rid of capitalism and what would come after it. What would the system be called? How would it function? What are some of the examples we could look to in our world, you know, outside of the U.S.? And what are some of the things we're going to have to create that maybe we don't really have a good example for yet? So those are the things we're going to be talking a lot about on this show. And I certainly hope that you join us again. The next scheduled live show is going to be Tuesday night at 9 p.m. That's Tuesday night at 9 p.m. Eastern. And my hope is to get the show to become a daily show. But, you know, we will see how far we get. So the next time I will see you all is Tuesday, 9 p.m. Eastern. All right. Take care. We'll be right back.